Who let the dogs out?
Who let the dogs out?
It's time for Pet Files Ask the Vet, underwritten by the Millers and Veterinary Practice. Traditional small animal medicine and surgery, chiropractic, laser therapy, acupuncture, and Chinese herbal medicine. 518-789-3440, millersandvet.com. With us today, Dr. Carolyn Cannon, owner and chief vet at the Millers and Veterinary Practice. Hello, Dr. Cannon.
Good morning. How are you?
I will refuse to complain, although this first question I could tell a story about. From Leanne in Patterson, how are you?
I'm doing great. I'm ready for questions.
All right, Leanne in Patterson. How can I turn my cat vegetarian?
Not advised. Cats aren't vegetarian. Cats are obligate carnivores. So to meet their amino acid requirements through corn and soy is certainly a possibility, but I don't believe it is that it's advised. It is not advised, in my opinion. They need to have meat. Cats need to have meat. You're going to run into all kinds of problems if you try to feed them just vegetables.
All right. So, and just because I've spoken numerous times about the cookbook that was supposed to make my cat healthy, but would really have killed it. Again, just basically vegetarian treats for your cat. It looked good and it had pretty pictures in it, and it had like wheatgrass or something.
It would be very difficult to get them enough taurine.
But even for people, like, how do we, let's go back to the very, 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 very basics. Where did the notion of making cats vegetarian come from? Do you have any idea?
I don't. I think it's because people are vegetarian. Some people are vegetarian and they object to, number one, having meat in the house. You know, which I can understand, but if you're going to go, you know, completely, if that's going to be that much of a problem, then maybe, you know, supplying mice and live. So that's what cats evolved on prey and eating meat, and that's what they need in order to survive and be healthy.
Right, and you will notice that in the savannah, big cats do not just eat. I mean, they're known for leaping at, you know, on the poor or wandering gazelle or whatever.
Right,
they're not just eating the bush. So it's just it's more important to not even delve into how it's like, no, you can't.
But, that would be my answer.
All right. Well, I'm the undiplomatic questioner. We'll use that as an answer. Dana in Sharon, can animals catch fleas outdoors? I have a cat, a couple rabbits, and a dog that have lots of space to roam on my land. None of them interact much with other people's pets, but I don't know if I have to watch out for fleas.
That's a great question because many people think that animals catch fleas outdoors. It's pretty unlikely. The adult fleas don't live very long without a host. So they can, you know, if you're, it's possible that if your dog rolls in a dead animal that's been recently dead, that they could pick up fleas. But the fleas don't sort of live in the grass and in the dirt. They're going to be easily desiccated or dried up by the sun. And, you know, if they're in an area that's damp, it has to be warm enough for them, especially the flea eggs. They need a certain temperature and motion and humidity in order to... So it's more likely that you might get flea eggs hatching. For instance, if you just moved into a place and the people before you had an old dog who slept under the porch and was full of fleas. There could be definitely, when your dog goes under the porch and lays down, enough warmth and humidity for those eggs to hatch out and your dog could get fleas. But wandering around on your yard and in the woods, really unlikely for them to pick up fleas. So it isn't, but that doesn't mean that you don't need to watch out for fleas because they can get them from other animals. And so if they're not really around other people's pets, there's certainly less of a chance. But that means you can't, you know, you don't bring them to places where other pets frequent. So if you are at the dog park, for instance, and they're playing with other dogs or there are areas where other dogs have just been, potential to pick up fleas. But it's true, if you don't take them anywhere, for instance, cats who live at home in the house and you never have, and you don't have a dog, and you never allow anyone's dog or cat to come in, you know, the chance of them picking up fleas is pretty low. But you do need to monitor them by looking, you know, especially if you've got an itchy animal. Look right. really closely, use a flea comb, run it through them, et cetera.
All right. Tevin in New York City, what do you think about pretty litter? I'm considering it, but I'd like to hear from a real vet.
Pretty litter is the litter that was developed to pick up changes in cat urine. So mostly, I believe it's pH. So, for instance, or and also will tell if your cat tell you if your cat has blood in the urine. I believe it changes color. So I haven't used it. I think that it's not a bad idea to recommend it, though, with cats who have repeated urinary tract problems. That's not a bad idea. At least people can tell maybe early on when their cat's starting to have a little blood in the urine from inflammation. So most urinary tract problems in cats are due to inflammation and not infection. By far, only a very small number actually have an infection. So in bacteria changes the pH of the urine, but so do lots of other things. So foods can change the pH of the urine. So what I don't know, because I haven't actually used it myself, is, you know, cats and dogs will get a rise in alkalinity of urine after they eat within a couple of hours. So does that change the litter pan a different color? I don't think it probably would work that way. What I would say is that if you have a cat who's had repeated problems with urinary tract troubles, then it's not a bad idea. But it isn't a biodegradable form of cat litter, and so I don't like it for that reason. I want to have, you're going to be using cat litter for your cats for the rest of their lives and throwing more stuff in the dumpster. I like to have something that is biodegradable.
All right. Toshi in Poughkeepsie, my Dobie mix Frida is 7, soon to turn 8. As she gets older, she's been starting to drool. For instance, when she's standing outside, I notice some spots where saliva has fallen. Is this normal?
If she isn't drooling because she's looking at something or smelling something that's delicious, then it isn't normal. So drooling usually means that there's irritation in the mouth or with the teeth or esophagus sometimes, or stomach. Those are the most common things. So if she has not been drooling, like a bloodhound will drool a little bit their whole lives, or a mastiff, you know, if this is a newer thing, as she's getting older, she should have a really good oral exam, including her teeth, and a veterinarian asking the right questions about esophagus and stomach. Esophagus is the tube that goes from the mouth into the stomach and can be irritated, and, you know, gastroesophageal reflux. Sometimes you'll get reflux in dogs, and they show particular symptoms of that. There's sometimes excessive burping and licking of the lips when the acid comes up. Other things like that should be checked out by a vet.
All right. Johnny and Melanie in Hudson. We have a new kitten in the house. He's super frisky to the point of sometimes biting. Last night we were up late scaring the heck out of ourselves, reading about all the things you can catch from a cat bite because the cat might be carrying bacteria. How would you know if a kitten had, for example, a pronunciation, Campylobacter infection or Pasteurella bacteria?
It's Campylobacter. You got it right. And Pasteurella. So these are not things that I would be terribly concerned about transmitting. So if your kitten is healthy, then you do have to be careful about actually having a cat's tooth puncture your skin, because they do have all kinds of nasty bacteria. Kittens usually don't puncture the skin, but if that's happening, then and you're immunocompromised, then you need to talk to your doctor. If that's happening and you're not immunocompromised, or meaning, you know, diabetes, et cetera, if you've got diabetes, that definitely includes immunocompromised, then you should scrub out those wounds, scratches and bites with I mean, I would actually, this is the only time I would ever advise an antibacterial soap and really scrub them. Just to, if you've gotten, you know, a puncture through the skin, it's a good idea. Typically, kittens' mouths are cleaner than adults, but to sort of test them, you'd have to do a stool sample and a fecal culture for Campylobacter, Pasteurella, and a wide variety, Salmonella, all those things. Cats can culture those from the stool. It doesn't mean that they're going to have that infection in the mouth, and it doesn't mean that people are going to be susceptible to those things. So for years and years, kittens have been scratching and biting people without a lot of problems. But as I say, I'm going to repeat one more time, if you have health issues and you have a kitten, you definitely should be in contact with your physician.
All right. And what about scratches? Do the same thing, you know, we have to thank Ted
Nugent
for that.
So, yes, I mean, Bartonellosis, cat scratch fever, but apparently people can get Bartonella, and I think it can cause some serious symptoms, but it's not a super common disease as far as I know, and cats can be tested for Bartonellosis. Typically, the times I've been asked to test them, so it usually doesn't make them ill at all, but the times I've been asked is because a doctor has been curious about potential cat scratch fever in a child, usually.
Okay. All right. The cats here just seem to be absolutely professional at finding, you know, it says that little hook. I don't know. You'd think I could move my fingers in time, but.
Mine are just sitting benignly on my lap, and the dogs bark because somebody's come home,
right,
and then I get the scratch.
Peek.
Ah!
You know what that sound means? It's like,
uh-huh.
It means they're out, and oh my gosh, they're dug into your leg. Yeah, it's amazing. All right, Morgan in Waterbury, my lab mix is 6 years old male with pretty intractable allergies. Someone recommended these chewables, Zesty Paws Allergy-Immune Bites, with colostrum in them. Why would colostrum be good for an adult dog? Does that sound legit to you?
So I'm not familiar with the Zesty Paws particular ones, but colostrum in general, it is known there's been research done on colostrum as an immunomodulator. So I think everyone understands an immunostimulant, which is something that boosts the immune system. Colostrum actually can modulate the immune response. So if you don't have enough response to, say, bacteria, it will increase it. And if you've got an overreaction, say, to allergens, that it may help to reduce that overreaction. And it's because of a proteins that are in hormones, proteins that are actually hormones in colostrum. So colostrum is the milk that's produced by, in this case, usually it's bovine, so a cow, in the first 2 to 3 days after having a calf. And it's rich in antibodies. And so I don't know what cows they're stealing this colostrum from to make the products, but it doesn't sound very nice, does it? But the colostrum can be beneficial in, I believe what it actually is supposed to do is to help the gut itself. So when you're helping the intestine, you can improve the immune system that way because you're not getting leaky gut issues. And because if you're keeping the microbiome, which is the bacteria that live in the gut, if you keep that healthy, there's more and more research that shows that, you know, people with a healthy microbiome are the ones who live to be over 100. And same idea with pets, is if we keep the microbiome healthy, we can keep the immune system healthy. The immune system is what helps us with those rogue cancer cells and all kinds of things like that. If we have a healthy immune system, then it may not overreact to allergens. In my hands, has it helped a lot? Maybe I just haven't used it enough, but certainly it's not something that the veterinary dermatologists regularly recommend. I think there wouldn't be any contraindication to it in dogs who are super allergic. It's really miserable for these dogs who are really allergic.
All right. So this side curiosity. How does one give it?
So it usually comes in a powder.
Okay.
It sounds like Zesty Paws is making some treats. So it's given orally. You can theoretically use it on the skin topically. I think it would be pretty messy, milky mess, but I have never had anybody do that. Okay. So I can't speak to that. But it is an interesting idea, and I think it probably depends on the cause of the itch and if allergies, if it's, you know, I have to always wonder, when I see some young dogs under the age of one, you know, are they really having an immune response because, an over-immune response because their gut is leaky when they've never had diarrhea, never had an abnormal poop their whole lives? You know, so there's certainly going to be several causes of itchy dogs. And so if it is deemed to be allergic, you know, is the colostrum helping in some and not in others? I would say that there's probably no reason not to try it.
Right. Okay. It's a perfectly reasonable assessment. I've just, you know, I'm so curious about whether or not allergic dogs are following a trajectory of allergic humans. Which came first, the allergy or the egg here? You know,
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of environmental toxins that we deal with every day, many, many more than there were 30 years ago.
Yeah, this is all true.
And so, yeah, so what is that doing to our immune systems? We don't really know. Is colostrum going to help with that? I don't really know. I would love to have, you know, I would love to have someone do more research on it in relation to dog allergies. I don't think that it's out there yet.
Okay. Jen in Pine Plains, I would like to have her dog. My dog very rarely seems to pick up ticks, even in ticky areas. Is it possible that there's something about her coat that would explain that? She's a cattle dog mix. Her coat does have a kind of naturally slippery texture and not much in the way of an undercoat.
So in general, that's an interesting question. In general, ticks are attracted to lighter colors. So, and I can attest to that. You know, my dog's in a heavily infested tick area. My black dog comes home with 3, and my blonde dog comes home with 35. And I thought for a long time, maybe I just don't see them. But even so, you know, when they lay on the couch and the ticks crawl off, definitely many, many, many more on the lighter colored dog.
And I just have to interrupt because I did a side-to-side comparison between dark Phoenix and light Shark. And Phoenix has always been a tick taxi, so it was really, and we're just having a terrible week right now. But mm-hmm. It was equal, and I was surprised.
Uh-huh. Your dogs are technically blonde and still light colored dogs. Blonde, and Phoenix is red, right? Reddish blonde.
Well, no, he's dark red. He's okay. He's like center red, but still. Yeah. I mean, so it's harder, you know, Shark, you just look at his face and you can do, you know.
And he has fewer ticks. So the other thing, the thing that they're attracted to is carbon dioxide, so the exhaling from the dogs and from us. And apparently they can sense it from a long distance. Oh. So I don't know if you have one dog who is panting more than the other. Also, you know, particular body temperatures, too. So some dogs run hotter than others. They do like warmth. They're attracted to warmth.
Well, that would explain Shark.
All of that, you know, makes me think that absolutely, you know, and you know with people that there are some people who just, we call them tick magnets.
Right.
And other people who rarely get bitten by a tick. So so definitely there are differences there. But that doesn't mean that you need to be super vigilant about the tick population. And you don't want them carrying ticks into your house to infect you and all of that.
So basically, Jen in Pine Plains is really a lucky person, right?
Maybe she's just not finding them. So, you know, if they bite, so it depends on if she's using anything for tick control. Did you say whether she is?
It just says that the dog, no name, very rarely seems to pick up ticks, even in ticky areas.
And yeah, so likely she's feeling the dog and petting the dog, and so sometimes if you don't see them walking on, you're going to feel those tick bites, those scabies all over the head and the neck and down their backs. And so if she's really not getting a lot of ticks and she's not using anything repellent-wise, then yeah, that's a great thing. And I do see dogs. I do see people who still walk their dogs, in these heavily tick-infested areas, and they get away with just picking off a few ticks instead of 100.
Yeah, I think it's,
so. Clearly, there is a difference.
I think it's the luck of the draw. I think it's the luck of the dog. I don't know. We've always had it's just tick-a-rama and. Okay, moving on. Krista in Dover. My Akita Mama Cass is 13 and mostly blind. Ever since she lost her sight, she's lost interest in going on walks. I really have to bribe her and coax her. How much exercise should I be aiming for?
It depends on if she is normal weight and she doesn't have terrible arthritis. Then, a 13-year-old dog, I would love to have walk a half a mile twice a day. And just in general, she's an Akita, so she's 13 is quite old for an Akita, and she's probably quite big. So if she is, if she's not overweight, if you could work her up, you have to work up to that gradually. So it's hard to give an exact amount because without seeing the dog, but because she's blind, she has her nose. And so in order to, what I'm more concerned about is this sort of loss of hearing as well, and then some cognitive dysfunction because she's not getting enough sensory input. So what I would say is, let her go outside, and if she's more comfortable in the yard, wander around and do a lot of sniffing so she gets lots of sensory input into her brain to keep her interested. And you could even, have toys that have a certain smell that she has to find around the house. That would be a fun game to keep her mentally stimulated. And other than that, try to get her to walk in some area where perhaps if you do it the same routine every day, that she'll start to get used to it. But, a nice half an hour walk twice a day or even once a day is really helpful unless it makes her sore afterward. Kind of more of a question geared toward your own veterinarian who knows her better.
And who probably also knows your living situation better.
Yeah, if you keep her active, you keep her more active and get her exercise, she's going to be mentally and physically better.
All right, and lastly, how do you do the Heimlich maneuver on a puppy? Asks Rico in Poughkeepsie. We have a four-month-old pit bull puppy, and with the amount of chewing she does, I'd feel more secure if I knew what to do if she ever started to choke.
So if she's a super vigorous chewer, you do have to be careful and make sure that the things that you give her, she can't rip off a big piece of it. So if she's a dog who... you give her a new fluff toy, and she chews it up immediately, pulls out the squeaker, and tries to chew that up and swallow it, then you really need to avoid those kind of toys. But that being said, any dog can choke. What I usually tell people is to, if you think you can pull it out, that's usually what happens is they try to swallow something that's way too big, and so you'll be able to pull it out. And so you hold the upper jaw just behind, with your fingers just behind the canine teeth, and if you're right-handed, say you do that with your left hand, your right hand is on the lower incisor teeth right in the front, and you can pull open the jaw that way and reach your hand in there and pull out whatever. If it's something that's, you can see, what you want to do first is look in there. So it's something big enough that you can pull out, then you can try to do that. But there isn't sort of a set way for Heimlich maneuver. You could, if she's a small puppy, hold her up in the air and sort of tip her forward and have somebody else whack her on the chest. Sometimes that'll work too.
But the easiest thing I'm going to just, as a civilian, I'm going
to
just
is to avoid.
Is A, to avoid, and second, if you have to, learn how it is that you can open their mouths and safely and get in there.
Right, you might want to try that first.
Yeah, you just
before the choking time,
right?
Just so that you're able to figure out, and if you can ask your vet to show you how to do that.
Right.
You know, you have to be careful. If it's not something really big, you could potentially push it down into the into the windpipe. So I guess that's why you're asking about Heimlich maneuver. But the idea is to get all the air out of the chest, and it doesn't work exactly in the same way with the diaphragm because dogs' chests are built so differently. So how do you empty all the air out of a dog's chest at once? You know, that answer to that can be difficult. You don't try it if they're up in the air, you know, so don't lift the front end up. You want to definitely have the front end at least as low as it can be, and you can compress. I might try to compress the ribs against my body to empty all. The idea, of course, is to get a force of air out through the windpipe so that you can push out whatever it is. And it really does not work very well in dogs.
Thank you very much, Dr. Cannon. This has been most informative. We really appreciate it. This has been Pet Files Ask the Vet, underwritten by the Millerton Veterinary Practice, 518-789-3440, millertonvet.com. Who let the dogs out?